This is telling us this is the same person who nobody had time for yesterday. And this is the same Democratic Party that schemed and connived to make sure that Bernie Sanders was not the candidate. And whatever anyone wants to say about Trump, he is the candidate despite the machinations of the establishment.
Like because of the establishment.
That's right. He was fueled by people power. I mean, the darker side of people power.
Yeah. And the Canadian angle to that, if you want to talk about, like, how does that affect us, is Pierre, just like Trump, really wasn't the establishment. Like, I mean, like him and Harper had that connection. But a lot of establishment conservatives, a lot of pre-merger conservatives did not like Pierre. They did not want Pierre to be the lead. Pierre capitalized at the right time. He waited for a couple people to go up first and kind of make their fails, jumped in at the right time. And he wasn't born into politics. He wasn't born into wealth and power. So I do see that parallel. I do understand why people see that. And they some people who might be inspired by Pierre in that side of things. But like Trudeau, more like Trump when you think about it, born into wealth, born into power, given all these opportunities. And once again, when Trudeau in 2015 came on board, the Liberals were the third party, right? Like, it was going to be Layton. And then, unfortunately, cancer took one of the best politicians from us. But Trudeau stepped up and he inspired people, right? I remember being young and in 2015 and being excited for Trudeau.
That was a vibe campaign during a time where optimism was perhaps like warranted based on where people were at. Economically, there is a larger macro global trend that is, I think, economic in nature, but like it is showing itself in the form of right-leaning populism. And what we're being told now is, no, there's a vibe that's more powerful than that. And that's, I guess, what I'm skeptical of. You get the sense that what happened with Hillary was the media was, whether this was like by design or just the way things work, we're going to say this so much that it becomes true. There's a lot of hot air, but maybe eventually the hot air becomes a hot air balloon that lifts and takes off. And they said, "This, she's a lock." And then it turned out, because at the time, there was still the concept that CNN et al. Had the influence to just, if they keep just hitting you in the head with this message, it will become true. The actual electoral politics of this is that all of this pro-Kamala messaging, the crux of it is on a teeny amount of wedge voters in wedge states.
Yep, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. If they can really hammer it there, then they win.
That's who all of this is for. And it's like, can she get the women out who were not enthused by Biden? And that might make it a reality. Is Trump not watching this and just trying to plan? He's great at just disrupting things.
Here's the funny thing. And so I was talking to somebody who does political strategy at a smaller level in the U.S. through DMs on Twitter. And I was asking them about like why is the Democrats seemingly doing all these like celebrity things and all these like headline grabbing things that like was really out of the norm for them, even in the Obama era when they were so popular. And it's basically like, this is the anti-Trump weapon. This will not be the DNC forever. This will not be the Democratic Party forever. This is the anti-Trump weapon right now, because Trump hates it when he's not in the news. He hates it when he's not the center of attention. And no matter what he says, no matter what crazy things that he's doing right now, people aren't focusing on him. They're just headline after headline after headline about the Democrats. And that might fade. But right now, he is pissed. And what that's going to do is that's going to put him off kilter. He is going to start saying things that aren't really going to grab the headlines as much as they're just going to piss people off. He is just going to do whatever he can, like a child. Like I have a three-year-old. When she wants attention, she throws a damn tantrum. And sometimes it's cute. Sometimes it's funny. Most of the times it's not. And Trump is really entering that it's not funny, it's not cute anymore phase. Like, I think people, it's really kind of worn off its welcome.
I think you got to give credit to where he is. I don't know if the word is talent or genius or whatever it is about him that has an innate sense of the zeitgeist and where things are at. You're absolutely right that he's emotionally driven. But his sense of like, okay, there's a mood right now. I can't seem to disrupt it or make anything stick against her. But that's going to fade. And there's going to be a little moment where the opportunity is going to exist for him. And maybe it'll be like a flailing tantrum like you suggest. But he's pretty good at getting attention with
his tantrums. Let me translate this for I don't know how many Gen Z listeners you guys got. But like basically Trump usually got Sigma Riz. Right now he's got Ohio Riz. It's not working.
No.
This is the problem with being a teacher.
No. This is just save it for TikTok, Frank. Frank, we try to make sure that people do not miss news stories that really should be noted. Do you have a news story to duly note today?
Yeah, I mean, I'm an Ontario teacher, right? So the thing I got to point out is Todd Smith. So Lecce steps down, he's moved out. He didn't want to be Minister of Education.
Stephen Lecce, yeah.
Yeah, and finally Ford listened and he gave him a better posting. So they swapped him out with the Energy Minister. I think a lot of people in education were looking forward to a new minister. The whole summer he's talking about how great and excited he is and looking forward to working with teachers and working with educators and school boards. Literally tweeted that out out one day, next day announces his retirement from politics. That's really rattling, I think, to a lot of us, especially because the person he's being replaced with is Jill Dunlop, who, if anybody has paid attention to what's happening in the post-secondary education sector, this is not the person we want running our education system. She was responsible for the mass increase of international students coming into the Ontario College system because they cut so much funding from the Ontario College program. So she is the mastermind behind why Ontario colleges and universities are underfunded. She's the reason why we have so many international students, which is causing housing crises in the GTA. It's causing mass issues in terms of funding at universities. It's why students at Guelph University don't have residence in first year. All these things that are constantly on the minds of parents. And now we have to deal with her in education. I'm not looking forward to that. That's something that really, really upsets me. And I think a lot of people aren't going to be talking about it because A, it's the summer, and B, nobody really pays attention to ministers. But this is something that if you are a parent, you need to keep your eye on this because I think it's going to have an impact.
You know, talking to not just parents, but teachers here in Ontario, like the level of frustration and fury with this government, we're watching this crucial system just getting
beaten down, torn apart.
Duly noted, duly noted. Okay, I have one to duly note here. This is a CBC story. Manitoba chiefs asked Trudeau and Governor General to rescind Senate appointment of broadcaster Charles Adler. Charles Adler has just been named to the Senate by Trudeau. Longtime podcaster, radio host, opinion guy, like decades of this. Turns out that 25 years ago, he made statements referencing Indigenous leaders as uncivilized boneheads and intellectually moribund. The Assembly of Chiefs in Manitoba called this vulgar and racist commentary. And they there was actually a complaint about this back in 2000 that was dismissed to the Canadian Broadcast Standards Council. I wanted to bring this up for a couple reasons. Like, it seems to be in the same category as Trudeau's blackface history, or, you know, or Poilievre had said some incredibly offensive
things. It was 25 years ago, right? Like, but Adler was an adult when he said it. He wasn't a teenager, right? Like, how old was Adler 25 years ago? He was still, what, in his 40s?
Certainly an adult who should be held responsible for the things that he says. Here's my take on this, which is not like an excuse for, first of all, there's a little bit of nuance missing here. Like when the Assembly of Chiefs says like that he called Native people uncivilized boneheads, that's a little bit.
It was just the leadership he was talking about,
right? He was talking about the leadership. And I think that in any other context for a broadcaster opinion person to call, if you're talking about leaders, governors, and say they're uncivilized boneheads, if you're talking about Ottawa that way, it would be no big deal. This might have just been a snafu of like, that is not the right word to use in the context, given the history
that
of
framing, yeah.
That framing. So you might let him off. But there's worse stuff he said. He said like something about how they need, Indigenous people need to get a job. Certainly, I think, you know, like racist stuff in his past. My ultimate take on this is not, oh, let the guy off the hook. He should be a senator. It's fine with me if this is disqualifying. It's more a defense of like the job of being an opinion person, which I think is almost like antithetical to the job of being a politician. Really, my critique here is of this Canadian practice of turning journalists into senators. If your job is to have opinions about matters of public interest day after day after day, if your job is to criticize the leaders, criticize policy decisions day after day after day, and try to engage people by being interesting about them, it is invariable that you will have some bad takes, and they're going to be recorded and published for the world to see forever. And that's why I feel like this culture of like, oh, I've graduated from like my sinecure after a career in journalism is to become a senator. I think it's important for people in our line of work to like swear off ever taking public office because we can't be good at this job. We should be conscious about what we say for the job that we're doing. I'm responsible to my job as a broadcaster, not my future career as a politician. And here, I'll put my money where my mouth is here, okay? And this is a message not for our listeners now, but for the low-level political operative who's going through the Jesse Brown archives because I'm now like 60 and I'm trying to get into the Senate and you're trying to like find something to get me with. Do not give Jesse Brown this office. This is Jesse Brown from the past disqualifying future Jesse Brown. Please play this clip. He should not be in government.
I think he's all right. Maybe not in government, but I think he's a good guy. So, duly noted.
Frank, I want to play for you a video that the Conservative Party of Canada does not want you to see. They originally wanted everybody to see it. They publish it. And then within hours after it was absolutely dragged to dirt, it disappeared, which is not something that happens often.
Who would do that?
This wonderful Twitter account, Disordered YYC, actually went through this video and traced back all of these video clips, and the stock footage library tells you where they come from.
Some of it's more egregious than other ones.
I think you and I should let people know the visuals are a big part of this. So we'll annotate this as we play the audio for people. Here's the video that Pierre Poilievre and the Conservative Party of Canada does not want you to see.
Pierre in his cowboy hat?
Yeah, tidy whitey, kind of t-shirt, Henley, and a white Stetson.
And it's easy to forget what home and hope look like. So let me paint the picture of school children, boys and girls, being welcomed by their teacher at the front of the school as they walk in to learn about reading, writing, arithmetic, and our proud history. Before walking in the door, though, they look back at Dad in his pickup truck who's dropped them off. He rolls down that suburban street with his window.
It's actually an American suburban street that we're seeing. We have suburbs in Canada. They could have gotten Canadian suburbs.
Canadian lumber on newly built and affordable Canadian homes.
He can hear that it's Canadian lumber somehow.
The house being built, Slovenia.
I thought it looked Slovenian.
He looks out his windows and sees those big, prestigious barley or canola fields.
Barley or canola, whatever, as long as it's not soy. Right, bruh?
And he looks up, and what does he see? He sees a brand new fighter jet. They're doing a
Russian fighter jets?
That's a big one.
Yeah, that's not great.
Later in the day, that whole family come together for a big family celebration because it's been 10 years since one of the adult kids in the family has been sober and overcome his drug addiction, and they gather around.
It seems insensitive to raise glasses of wine to celebrate the guy's sobriety.
Well, it was a drug addict, so.
Okay.
Some wonderful venison that was shot with totally legal Canadian firearms. And they sit.
Apparently shot by an American woman with a rifle there.
The car leaves the driveway, and they turn and they look west. And what do they see? They see wheat, foothills, Rockies, and a big blue twilight sky.
That's Tuscany.
Seriously?
This is in Tuscany.
That's hilarious. And the most Canadian foothills of Indonesia?
Wonosobo, Indonesia.
And the Rockies that were actually from Utah.
And they look each other in the eye, and they say, we're home. This is our home, your home, my home, our home. Let's bring it home.
I mean, I would never have to declare that I'm home.
They both say it to each other at the same time.
Yeah.
Where to even begin? That is Pierre Poilievre's optimism?
Yeah. So he's trying, but I think that he has mired himself in so much negativity over the last 20 years of his political career. Like, he's only known, even when he was in government with Harper, he's only known being a pit bull. And I think he really does struggle with the vibe check of, like, being happy and being inspiring. And I'm sure that there are some people for who that hits. But for the regular Canadian, the people that he needs to win in the 905 for him to get that majority government solid, I don't think it's hitting.
Hard disagree up until the release of this video. I actually have watched I couldn't help but be impressed by the calculus that everybody who follows this stuff was just like shocked and appalled that Poilievre thought he could just trade in his glasses for a tight t-shirt and fool everybody that he's not this like kind of abrasive pencil neck geek. Unpleasant.
It's almost like cartoonish where like the character puts on a mustache and it's like, oh, who are you?
Yeah, like shed the peewee thing and be this like other guy. But they made some very smart decisions. Most people were not paying attention. They never knew that Poilievre. They knew that they had the same opportunity that Kamala has, which is like
a refresh.
Yeah, like the overall awareness of this person is so low. There's way more people who don't know them than people who do. So why don't we just start fresh and make it the Poilievre that suits this moment and not that moment? And to this question of optimism, before Kamala Harris, I watched with some, you know, kind of frightened regard as how he adapted the Trump thing to shave off some of the loonier aspects of it.
And make it more palatable.
He was able to encapsulate the Trudeau and the hang Trudeau stuff without saying the words and kind of adapting this into like, no, I actually love this country and I've got a strong optimistic view of it.
It's not because we're angry, it's because we're passionate.
I would feel this way and make this argument before this video. And the problem with this video is not just that it uses, like, they could have made this video using Canadian stock footage. It would have been just as stupid. It is worth noting, and it's certainly fun, and we should all make fun of this video, not just because of how much fun it is, but because the fact that his bullshit pastiche of a Canadian utopia is, it feels like it was made by AI.
Yeah, I was like, that's the vibes that I was kind of getting. And what's even funny is like some of the smaller things. Like I get that he was in Alberta or wherever he was when he was doing this, but like the words common sense with a cowboy hat in the middle on his podium. Like, who is this for other than people who are already going to vote for you?
It's so lame and it's so hackneyed and cliched and tossed off and lazy. The fact that the best way that the Conservative Party could think to illustrate this was with stock images is like delicious and should be made fun of.
Could there not have been footage of him in a suburb walking past construction? Like there must have been. You could have done this with Pierre alone.
And the speech on its own, I don't know, I guess it's some intern, like, but they have a lot of money, so it's really hard to figure out. The fact that they pulled it is remarkable here, because the way that they have responded to this kind of mockery in the past is doubling down and turning it on their opponents, like, oh, the elites are sneering at us again. The media is sneering at us again. They don't get it.
Pierre's not one to apologize, right? Like, he's not really the kind of guy who says, you know what I said was wrong. Like, even when he was a younger member of parliament and he made a few racist comments, so he's never really been one to like fully own an apology and move forward. He very much is like, no, I am the guy. I am right. And for them to delete this is, to me, a sign of cowardice. And what I mean by that is that they are so gung-ho about their idea. They think that they're right. They know that they're right. They're pushing forward. And to be fair, the Trudeau team also always thinks that they're right and they have their master plan, sure, whatever they think is going to work. But the fact that they deleted this shows me the type of cowardice that we're seeing from Trump now, where he's scared of Kamala, in so much that when there's a little bit of public pushback, when they get ratioed on Twitter, when they're finally made to be seen as fools, all of a sudden now they're like, whoa, 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 we can't be seen like that. Like, when we're foolish and it's our choice, it's different. But when people are actually laughing at us, and it's not our choice. That's not great.
I guess. I mean, people have laughed at Pierre many times in the past, and he's been able to turn that around and make that a comment on our elitism or our snobbery or our media bias. Besides the fact that this is just fun and Twitter had a fun day with this, I do think it's worth talking about, A, because they took it away. But the really interesting thing to me is that this is a super postmodern speech that he gave. It's super campy, the cowboy cosplay. He's playing to an audience of Albertans, and like, I guess he's like nominally a Western dude, but he's no cowboy. And the white t-shirt and the Stetson is like a costume. And they know it and he knows it. And you kind of realize this at the moment where he's like, he's laying it on so thick. It's Canadian wood and it's Canadian energy and it's Canadian venison shot with a Canadian gun. And they laugh because they know that it's a joke.
Yeah, it's okay to be a little campy. And I think that actually does work in some capacity.
But how could it be both at the same time? It's really interesting because usually when you would do the like America, I'm going to make fun of a red-blooded American cliche, you are satirizing that patriotic redneck thing. To be pandering to that kind of patriotism while making fun of that kind of patriotism is really interesting. And the fact that audience was like, ha, 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 that's a bit too much. It's Canadian venison and Canadian this and Canadian that, but we love it. So it's a joke and we're kind of a joke, but we're in on the joke and we love the joke. I mean, it's not even very Canadian. Most of this is just borrowed from American mythology.
So I think we're two Toronto guys, right? Like, Ontario is where we are. People make fun of people in Toronto saying that we think they're the center of Canada, blah, blah, blah. But this was designed and created for people in the West. You look West, all these Western things. It was not meant for us. It was meant for the people who feel that Western alienation, those people who supported the Freedom Convoy. Maybe they didn't show up. Maybe they weren't vocally, but they thought to themselves, yeah, let's stick it to the government. I think that's who it's for
sure.
To rile that base up and to keep them committed to the cause.
It's super sophisticated, but for the video that tanked it all, and in the way that, like, who loves that Jeff Foxworthy guy, you know, you're a redneck when joke? Like, his biggest audience are people from the South, right? So the dynamics of mockery are, if we mock them, we're hated, and it confirms everything that they think.
But when they mock themselves, it's all cool.
It's a very working man's vision. Like, everybody in his vision of Canada
is an electrician who grabs lightning from the sky and nails wood with their hammers by hand. And like,
he's been hitting those notes for a long time. Like, as if everybody is the honorable work, that the farmers.
And his parents were teachers. And I don't see him ever talking about like the hardworking teachers. Like, even when he talks about schools, he doesn't put the emphasis on like how hard teachers work. He puts the emphasis on like, we're going to make schools where like things aren't woke. And hey, if we're talking about Canadian workers, the working class is not just people who work with their hands. The working class is like the teller at TD. The working class is the person who is stocking the shelves at your local grocery store. The working class are firefighters and police officers and nurses and teachers, but we don't talk about them.
The working class is the poor intern who just got fired for that stock image use.
I think this video would matter in an election. I think if we were paying attention and Canadians were ready to vote and it was like the 2024 election, a video like this would strike people as being like a little too weird, and like especially anybody outside of the West, people in BC, people in Ontario and Quebec and in the Atlantics, it would be like kind of like cringy in a not good way. But because it's so far out of the election season, nobody cares. Nobody's going to remember this, and it's going to blow over.
It's going to blow over. Good news for Pierre. Optimism is back.
Optimism's back, baby.
That's Shortcuts this week. Frank, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
I can be emailed, as always, at jesse@canadaland.com. I read every email that people send in. Frank Dominic, where can people find you?
Mainly on TikTok at Frank Dominic, D-O-M-E-N-I-C. And you can find me on YouTube and Twitter and Instagram, wherever. I got reposting. I repost everywhere.
Frank's TikTok is worth your time. Go check it out. This episode is produced by James Nicholson with additional production by Caleb Thompson. Our production manager is Max Collins. Theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca.
Amendment.